Hello and welcome to another episode of the Idealized Science Podcast. I'm your co-host, Jacob Becky, and with me, as always, is Dr. Wargo. We're here today for an exciting topic of the science conferences at the high school level. The Idealized Science Institute just yesterday gave out its first scholarships to a student at Freedom Area High School in a suburb of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. For engagement in authentic scientific practice for a phenomenal long-term project. This is the first of many we hope to give out. And today we thought it would be good right after the conference to just debrief and talk a bit about science conferences at the high school level, long-terms, how they came to be historically, what they are today, and how they can look in your classroom, some of the difficulties and how to get started in long-terms. And a bit more about the Idealized Science Institute and our plans. Also, we, in addition to having, how many high school students did we have there yesterday?
That presented probably, 70 or 80?
Say almost 100.
Yeah, with the middle school students.
Yeah, and then we had middle school students, 27 sixth graders that presented. So we're also going to bring in Janine Ging, who is the middle school science teacher at Freedom. And we'll just chat about all this and hopefully with the hopes of getting more teachers out there to engage their students in authentic science practice. So without further ado, let's jump in. And Wargo, maybe you can just speak a bit about, the origins of long-terms, mm-hmm. Both, just in science education research, and then also for you yourself. You've been teaching for almost 30 years now. Yeah. If you can just tell people a bit about how you started with long-terms.
First of all, they're like an antidote to science fairs. And science fairs, the problem has always been, you usually know the answer to whatever you're looking into. And we're not doing that. We're trying to make it so we don't know the answer to begin with. And we actually have a motto, if you can Google it, no need to do it. And this is what educational researchers have been essentially asking us to do for a very long time. We mentioned yesterday, 1894, Committee of Ten was essentially asking teachers to think about how to pragmatically engage students. And then we talk a little bit about Dewey and what does it mean to learn science? And clearly it's not just content. It's about how you go about investigating and then analyzing. And then the big thing is getting a critique about what you are claiming. So we have students doing that at the high school level and now at the middle school level, and seems to be working out pretty well.
Yeah, I mean it's the eighth year that this has been going on, so it's 2024 now. So I think in that's right. It would have been a year after I left high school, so 2016 would have been the first year.
Mm-hmm. Although you are our first keynote speaker, so I guess we should mention that. Just like a real science conference, we have a keynote. We have lots of presentations. We have discussion panels.
Lots of alumni come back. And that's the central part.
That's crucial. The alumni that have gone through this process that are either in engineering now or mm-hmm. math, science, or any kind of STEM, they can share their expertise. And if they have research that they're doing at the university, they come back. And it's really wonderful. You have a mm-hmm. sixth grader presenting and then a PhD level quantum right. physicist. Right. And,
from a school that, is severely underfunded in yeah. science and in general, as we saw with no AC, everyone was in there sweating,
it's a hot day.
I think this is just a proof of principle that this can work wherever. Freedom is definitely not a rich district, yeah. but we make the most of what we have there. And so I think this is something that people can definitely do in their districts, but maybe it'd be good to give just an overview of what this eighth annual schedule looked like, mm-hmm. and then we can talk a bit about what has evolved over the years and what seems to work and not work.
So at Freedom, we have a block schedule. So we have four blocks throughout the day, and then we have this personal learning time, PLT, at the end of the day. So the first block, what we did is we took from all of the different classes that are engaged in long terms. We had a physical science, physics 1, physics 2, physics 3 course, and then we also had a sixth grade teacher who's been working with us for years, and we essentially took one example from each one of the classes, lined them up, and that was a nice warm-up to the conference. I normally started off giving a little historic perspective on why we're doing this and why it's important, and so that takes up the first block. And then the second block, we start to break into sessions. First, everyone's in the auditorium, just like any conference, you meet at first.
And then you have parallel sessions.
Yeah, but... and then we have parallel sessions. This year we went just with two or three rooms at a time. We've done it a bunch of different ways, but this worked out well. And you were our keynote this year. High demand from the students. They all said, let's have Dr. Becky come back. And so everyone comes back to the auditorium. We have a few minutes to gather everyone, keynote, just like a conference. And that's where we awarded the first scholarship.
Yeah. So this was to a student at Freedom who did a great long-term on regenerative braking in EVs, essentially. Yeah. It modeled this. And I mean, maybe you can speak to a bit about what a high quality long-term looks like. I mean, clearly the thing that I took away now, you actually saw this long-term develop, but yeah. I mean, you can just tell the time that must have been put in was what would you say? A factor of 10 more than most students.
Oh, I mean, without a doubt.
Right.
But you know, he wants to go into electrical engineering. He's very interested in the environment and how to use energy appropriately. Can we get some back? And what is the efficiency of that? And so, as he's designing this circuit, nothing's working, so he's got to rethink about how he's getting his data. He notices that there's gaps. He has a problem where the magnetic strength isn't quite enough, but he had a 3D model made of a flywheel, and then he's mounting these magnets in there.
Yeah.
And then he has a coil problem where the coil isn't picking up enough voltage. This is really a high-level one. He's been through all the way through Physics 3, and now he wants to find a new technique for measuring when he's at his highest speed. He's going to have an LED blinking, and then he has a relay. It's just a very long process, but the enjoyment that he got out of it was fantastic. And
well, the beauty is, like, you know, when you pick a question that you're excited about, and this is what a lot of students did, you know, there's that excitement there, and that I think, in addition to us knowing that, like, this authentic engagement is good for understanding nature, science, and all these things, I really do think it can be a change agent for, like, getting students that are on the fence when they're just, you know, they're just struggling with math. They don't get it. Why are we doing this? Then they have some moment out there doing experimentalism where it, like, clicks and they're like, oh, there's something here, you know.
Wait, and that one actually required a bit of equipment that we happen to have in the lab. We encourage everyone to never spend a cent on their long term. But I don't know if you saw the long term where we had a young man who was making tunnels out of paper. Actually, a couple students did this, but he was using light. Another was detecting methane, which is interesting. But either way, he was trying to figure out how tunnel size affected the dispersion of light. And, you know, that's pretty straightforward, the data collection. But as he was changing one variable, he then took and made a graphic of how those changes were changing with distance, if I'm not mistaken. But then he took and used his ideas that he's learning in upper-level mathematics. He took the slope of every one of those lines, transformed that, and gave us a new type of graphic that was showing rates of change over time. Mm. And essentially, he's taking the derivative of this, and it's just wonderful. So the ingenuity that these students are showing, tying it into the mathematics that they're currently in, there's just, you know, out of all of them, I mean, there's so many great ones.
Right.
And you know, even the sixth graders, you might think, they're not into the upper-level mathematics. Just being able to come up with a graphic that appropriately shows the range of your data.
Right.
I mean, that's basic
making
statistics.
A claim at that age, setting up their own experiment, a way to test it. You know, the kid that was interested in understanding how the golf clubs
varied. Was great.
This was great. The drag on the airplane wings, experiment, using a hairdryer to try and model like a sort of a wind tunnel, all these things. Just having students come up with authentic solutions to their problems, it's great.
And you know it's a good one. Sorry to interrupt, but you know it's a good one because most students want to end up making a positive relationship every time.
Yeah.
And you see some of them, they're like, look, it doesn't look like there's a relationship. And that's good when students can say, look, I did this, and despite me wanting it no, there really wasn't a relationship.
Right.
And the other thing that's super important is they all know they're going to go in front of other people that have done long terms and alumni, professional scientists, engineers that are going to critique. So they're really trying their best to make sure, I really have quality data. My methodology is good. And if they don't, they go back and they're like, look, I don't think this is good enough. They're doing that on their own. So
yeah, and that, I mean, this is why it's so close to modeling a real science conference, because it essentially is a real science conference.
It really is.
It's a group of people that have similar backgrounds presenting and getting a critique, and there being dialogue there. So it was really exciting to see. And one of the things that I really appreciated was a lot of students, especially the older students, are really comfortable now when they're asked a question. You could see that they were comfortable saying, I just don't know, you know, and that's that's a great, because I feel like when you don't have this training, there's always this tendency to feel like you have to give an answer, but they were saying things along the lines of, oh yeah, I considered that and I thought about it for a long time and I still don't know. Right. And then that's a jumping off point for future long terms and for these things. So really a lot of authentic scientific practices were on display there.
And what's interesting is the students are not nervous about their material. They're just nervous that there's people there.
Yeah.
But in terms of their material, no one knows what they've done more than they.
Better than them, yeah.
Yeah, so it's really a wonderful dynamic. And I have to say, they're transformed after this. They come in and they're like worried about presenting in front of people, but they're really the expert here.
Totally.
And they get to shine, and it's just a great experience. You know? So
tiring for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you just seemed drained as it got closer and closer with all the scheduling and stuff. But so maybe we should talk a bit about just some of the difficulties that you know, I will say the only experience I've had in leading students in long terms was a one credit course to first year undergraduate students at the University of Colorado in Boulder. And so it was about 20 students, mm-hmm. and I think we had about six groups. So I was aware and helped people sort of settle on six projects. But we had small groups working together as opposed to at Freedom, where every student does their own long term.
Yeah.
I think every student doing their own project is better, but I think you have to face the fact that at some schools are big enough that it would just be intractable to have, you know, every student.
In modern science, rarely do you do something on your own. That's why it's a great experience.
But that's why it's idealized as well.
It's idealized because you're in charge of everything. Yeah. You don't have to make compromises with the other person.
Well, and then in group projects, there's always one person doing a majority of stuff. And someone's sitting there writing. Yeah, someone's sitting there doing nothing. Someone's doing all the stuff and someone's writing. So there's always this dynamic. But what would you say? So first off, at Freedom, you started teaching, 1997? Or was it a little later?
95, 96 was 95. My first school year.
So when did you start doing long-terms for every student?
I think probably 5 years in sounds about right. Because,
okay, so maybe
one of our teachers who's a teacher that was a student.
Miss Goodson?
Yeah, she did hers, and she's been there, 20 years now?
I don't know.
Whatever.
Okay, so early 2000s, so you've been doing it for at least 20 years with students.
I think it's actually 24 years now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So over that time, I mean, you've worked with each student to help come up with projects. Yeah. What are some of the main takeaways? Like for me, in 1 year, the biggest thing I can say is that picking a seemingly simple topic is that if I could just keep, every time they would come back to me with a new idea and I'd say, you know, can you make this simpler? Because
I'm going to do something on black holes. Okay,
right.
let's be...
Yeah, so like something as simple as a pendulum, we know it can just be so good for probing a simple mechanical system, making claims, and seeing that it's not so easy to get data to back those claims.
Yeah.
So what are some of these sort of things that could help teachers help their students enact these?
Well, the first thing I would do is I would do one as a class, right? Like, let's all work on some seemingly simple problem. Realize that when you keep asking questions, you realize maybe I don't know the answer and we need to go back and recollect data. So I think that's the way to start. And then, you know, whenever they're comfortable, if they say, can we do a group of three? Fine. And some might be, comfortable doing it on their own. But, well, let me ask you a question. When you did a long term in high school and you've seen the sixth graders and you've helped with the sixth graders and you've helped with the high schools, and then you did this at the university.
Yeah.
Did you notice much of a difference?
No, there was granted, first year undergraduates are pretty similar to high school seniors, right? Really no difference there. But these were a self-selected group of students because they had to sign up for this class.
Wow.
So this was the fundamentals of scientific inquiry, but one of the main goals of the class was to get students up to speed for undergraduate research and make connections and give lab tours and stuff. So these were some motivated students.
Yeah.
So they were really good. That said, you run into the exact same problems with, I'm going to test the some super complicated phenomena.
Test neutrinos.
Right, with, and it's like, know. Okay. And then I managed, you know, I showed some demo. We did the pendulum.
Yeah.
So for people listening, you know, in the Idealized Science book that Dr. Wargo wrote, he outlines in a very detailed fashion how to implement this sort of, the essence of the long term, mm-hmm. taking students through discovering the period of the pendulum experimentally, right? Yeah. And this can get all of the, hits all the nature science inquiry, all the things that you want.
And it really is detailed, like excruciating detail, so that like...
You can just read it and do it.
And so you recognize this is a long process and you have to take it slow and...
Yeah.
You know, so it really,
it's a slow burn,
slow burn
to get through. But once you do, it's like, okay, this is how it's going to actually play out.
And it changes the way that you approach problems. Instead of thinking about getting things done,
right,
you think about how do we know things and what is our confidence?
It's fantastic.
It's a really detailed, you know, guide for teachers, students, whoever wants to try.
And I still remember doing it in high school. Yeah. And that was a very, I remember because, you know, you make it really clear that one, we shouldn't Google, and two, we shouldn't talk to older students.
Yeah.
There is still always the thing of you see a student that's in physics too, and they're like, "Oh, you're doing the pendulum." Like it's kind of like a.
But they never tell them.
No,
it's
but it like, you know, it kind of bonds everyone because you're like excited that you've gone through the same
camp.
Thing.
It's like a boot camp, and it really is like a cultural phenomenon.
So you took 9 weeks to go through that with the students, and I had 2 class periods with at the college level, which just literally that much faster. So, you know, I think there were just some things that you need more time for.
Yeah.
But even after that, you know, they understood the essence, and there were some really good projects, but still really motivated students, and it was hard in the time that we had in that semester to get them through long terms. It's hard to...
Well, here's something that you can consider. Maybe instead of having them come up with an idea, you can seed ideas. Like, here, we've got a bag of springs here. We've got different size rings or whatever it might happen to be, rubber bands, anything. Right. And then they can make claims, but you've already given them some materials.
Some raw materials.
And if you have some things like, look, we also have some ring stands here. We've got some masses. You know, you can seed them along and whatever time you have. So I think the big thing is just jump in and don't expect it to be perfect at first. And by the way, the students are really going to give you a lot of slack and they appreciate that you're giving them agency and just allow them to understand that, they're being graded on effort and thinking through this. And another great thing to do during this time is to journal. Like, how are my thoughts changing about science as I go through this? So,
well, and that's why you probe ahead of time. Yeah. What is science? What do scientists do? Yeah. And then at the end of the year and look at the nature of science and these opinions.
But you
and
don't
stuff.
Have to follow any strict, you know, way of doing a long term. The thing that you want to avoid is science fair,
or
textbook,
cookie cutter,
cookbook labs. You know, things that the students, A, are interested in, and B, it's even better when they think they know the answer.
Right.
I know this for a fact. 100%. I've worked my entire life around this instrument 100%. Or something.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you made a claim. Can you back it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's the essence of it, and that is also, you know, long terms really are the essence of what idealized science is. Right. So they really just, they capture a lot of this.
And it seems so easy, you know, but it's hard to get students... it's probably harder for teachers to take that first step and say, I'm going to get out of my comfort zone. Because teachers, you know, often want to be as prepared as they can. And you don't know the answer.
No.
And that's totally fine.
Yeah.
And that's what science is. I mean, you don't know the answer.
It's a good, I think it'd be a good growth opportunity for teachers as well as students, because teachers inevitably have to get comfortable saying, I don't know. We don't know. Let's figure it out, right? And guide the student to making change and stuff. And the truth is, like we saw, you know, not all these projects end up in this beautiful final form.
No.
It's all about the growth from the starting point to the end. And that's, you know, that's how you grade people. And so it's really not at all about the outcome. It's all, or in terms of the actual project outcome.
Growth.
Yeah, it's about growth for the student. So it was really cool to see. It's always, especially... You know, now 8 years on, being at the first one, being at this one, I haven't been able to make it to all of them because I've been studying in different places.
Probably 6 of the 8?
Probably, yeah. But it's just great to see the alumni come back and give talks and have the interactions. Obviously, it's like you said, it's a bit like a middle school dance. It's a little challenging to get students to go up. But I got more questions yesterday than I have. I saw a lot of younger students talking to the alumni. It's a great day.
And the level of respect that the alumni carry with them back, because they sat in the same chairs.
Right.
They sat and did the same type of coursework. They did a long term. it's really community building.
Right. So for schools,
which is science, right? Science is a community.
And that's what I tried to explain a bit in the keynote is like,
We should record your keynote for the ISI.
It would be good in the future. I think it would be nice to ask the speaker if they're comfortable with having it recorded. It'd be nice to have a document of them. But I was telling the students about the importance of networking, and I think, that's why the conference really does have all those components, because it even has the networking. It even has the awkward downtime where you got to sit there and make conversation with somebody you don't know.
I don't think teachers ever consider that when they're teaching science, about the social nature of science and how crucial it is.
Well, and there's so much more to just to science than just the technical capabilities. Absolutely. And this is what I was saying to some students there,
Think of all the engineers talking about how important it is to be able to work with other people,
right,
be able to communicate well, get your ideas across to others. I mean, it's just vital that students hear this.
Totally.
Yep.
Yeah. So, okay. I mean, we could go on and on about this, but I think now would probably be a good time to talk to Janine a bit about working with the sixth graders and the challenges.
Why don't I let you two talk?
Yeah. All right. Sounds good. Awesome. Okay. Now we're here with Janine Ging, sixth grade science teacher at Freedom. She's been working with the middle schoolers to also do long-term projects, and they then come up and present at the high school. How long have you been doing this with the students at Freedom?
We have attended every science conference with the exception of last year.
Okay, so
seven out of the eight years.
And you've increased the number of students presenting, I think, because the first one, I think only had a couple.
We had maybe five or six the first few years. We even had some over COVID that worked with us remotely and then presented remotely. And this year we had 25.
Yeah, that's awesome. And all the presentations were great. And they present, there was a sixth grader that presented on the main stage in the auditorium in front of everyone. And then they break out in the parallel sessions and present just like the high schoolers. It's really awesome. So, what are some of the, first off, I guess, how do you fit it into your curriculum with everything else? And what are they learning at the time when they're doing these things, and how do you sort of blend this in your year? How does it fit in?
So I actually teach math and science at the sixth grade level, so I'm integrating it between both of those. I usually have my honors math kids do these projects, and we really strategize that in with our statistics unit. So sixth grade is the first year that children in Pennsylvania learn how to do statistics.
Okay.
And it is extremely difficult to convince a 12-year-old why stats is important.
Right.
I can get them to get to the answer, mm-hmm. but for them to understand what that answer means mm-hmm. has a totally different meaning.
Right.
So by them doing these projects, having personal attachment to those numbers,
right.
they understand, and then they can explain not only their project, but they can start looking at other statistics, explaining them and understanding the deeper meaning behind it,
right.
besides just getting to that final answer.
Right.
So that's sort of my ploy that I get them into. Since I also teach science, they're picking different disciplines that we use in sixth grade and integrating that in with their math.
Awesome. Yeah, very cool. Yeah, and I think even at the high school level, I think this is still a problem where you have, and at Freedom, I mean, we need more probability in statistics, but even in physics, it feels detached until you're actually like doing a project. And then suddenly people are like, oh, this is what we were learning when we were doing inclined planes or something, that seems very removed from reality. So it's awesome. But I mean, I have to imagine, that it's kind of challenging to corral all of these youngsters into actually doing a full project. So, if you can talk a little bit about how you manage to get 20-some students to actually complete these projects that high school students are completing.
It is very challenging. That particular class is project-based, so they do a different project every 9 weeks.
Okay.
And then we usually start in January and take till May to complete this one.
Okay.
But I could not do this without the high school students.
So you have the high school students come down and
we blend back and forth. Not always. It all depends on it from day to day.
Okay.
I like to be able to take the kids up to the physics lab at the high school since we're all on the same campus. It's just a short walk up the hill. They love going up to the high school. It's a special treat for them and to see everything. We have access to more tools and equipment up there. So when we try to pair them up at first, one-on-one, one-on-two with the high school kids, get ideas down, get a question that they want to find out about, build their claim, and then we can start helping them and directing them into designing whatever the experiment they're going to be doing.
Right.
And that's when, they think that a lot of things are impossible. if somebody wanted to do something on roller coasters. I'm like, well, you don't actually have to have a roller coaster. You can get your Kinect kits that you're always playing with and scale things down. Somebody else was really into aeronautics, and he's like, I don't know how to do this without airplanes. So he designed a 3D wing and put it on an old skateboard and blew it across the floor with a hairdryer.
It was a great project.
And when they see, okay, I don't actually have to have that real thing. I'm simulating this in some other way. I had a girl who, she wants to become a chef. And she said, I want to do something with knives because when you're a chef, that's an integral part of your equipment, but I'm not allowed to do anything with knives in school. So we built inclined planes with putty and she was dropping them and measuring. So once they can start to see, okay, I'm doing things in different ways.
Building analogies from the thing they want to what they actually have access to.
It makes a big difference. And it's interesting to see their problem solving processes along the way. I had a girl who was doing an experiment about the sweet spot on her softball bat. And you know, she was like, okay, I can't drop the ball because that's not going to be consistent. She tried rolling it off of things. It wasn't working. And she finally came to me and she's like, I need a tube because I can drop it straight on then. And we got big old RAM board paper that was laying around. She built a tube, taped it onto the side of a filing cabinet, and it worked perfect.
That's awesome.
And it took her so many different times. And, you know, they think they're going to go out and do this in 10 minutes.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
And when I tell them it's going to take you 5 months,
they're like, what?
Right.
Yeah, no way. And so it's probably, I mean, I assume it's one of the longest things they do until that point by far, right?
Absolutely the longest thing they've ever worked
on. So even that alone is great. It starts to build the grit and, actually sticking with it.
But the first few weeks we go up at least once, sometimes twice to the high school. We use our academic support period, which we have a lot of flexibility with. We get, depending on the day, however many of the physics club kids can come and work with us. And then some of the kids still need help just developing their presentations. And then we go through and we practice. And they got very good this year in particular at critiquing each other and each other.
That's great.
And little things like, you don't have a picture on this page, or I know what you're trying to say because I saw you doing it, but nobody else will understand unless you put a video in here.
Which is great.
Or explanations, you know, if they're copying a little bit too much from a source, they're like, oh, you're gonna put that into your own words because
You can tell that this is clearly from Wikipedia, you know, something along
They were very helpful to each other.
That's awesome. And I mean, that's what you want from a science conference and just science education in general, is you end up getting the students actually helping each other and growing together, and because all of those skills are useful beyond just the project itself. So I mean,
and rarely
really cool
in the real world you get thrown into something and it's told, you're doing this completely by yourself.
Totally.
You work with a group and you have to be able to take that criticism, work and mold things so that it becomes awesome.
Absolutely.
And I always tell them, I said, we're very, very hard on you to get to this end.
Yeah.
But when you're there, it's spectacular.
Right.
It's
and then it always is when we see them present. It's always fantastic. I mean, seeing the kids that young be on stage in front of so many people presenting, they seem nervous, but they always seem really excited after. And I feel like it could... I mean, I guess you've had students now that have gone then from sixth grade and then done long terms at the high school level as well.
I've had several.
Right?
I've
so, I mean, this is obviously, I wish that we, ideally, students I think would do this in science every year, but it's awesome that they're doing it at that age and then now doing it at the high school level. It has to be really cool to see.
So, quite a few of the kids who were seniors this year and mentors had presented when they were in sixth grade.
Yeah.
And I had about a dozen that year, and I think all of them were helpers this year.
That's awesome.
It is.
I really think it's a change agent, and I want to see it expanded more in our schools. It's just compare that to the labs that, you know, give you a manual and say, mix this with this, you know, and then they do it. They fudge the numbers so they get the standard error low enough, and then they're like, okay, I'm done. Turn it in. That's not making any change. But I feel like what, you know, you see with these sixth graders presenting at the conference is potentially making a lot of...
And I have
serious
to say,
change.
Freedom being a smaller community, the kids know each other and families know each other. And my high school kids, or I say mine because at some point they were mine, sat in my sixth grade room, but they really step up at helping. I've had one year I had somebody who was doing something on fishing, and one of the high school kids went and picked the kid up. They went out fishing over the weekend. Not only did they have a fun time fishing, but they completed whatever needed to be done for the experiment.
That's great.
They'll come down to my room during academic support and say, I need to take so-and-so out to the football field. I got permission from the principal to take them out, and we're going to go
collect data,
on whatever their experiments are.
It's awesome.
So they come down and check on them, as well as us going up to them. And the fact that they get to go, and I always tell them, I'm going to treat you like a high schooler for the day. You get a schedule. You get to move around on your own, eat lunch in the that was probably the scariest part of their day, was eating lunch in the cafeteria.
Having to go through the line and stuff,
sat there until I came in, and we don't want to go online. I'm like, come on, let's go.
Yeah.
But even then, it was really neat to walk into the cafeteria to check on them, and they're sitting right with those groups of high school kids, including them for the day.
Awesome. Yeah, very cool. Yeah, any other thoughts? I mean, I think you shared a lot of useful things for teachers out there. I mean, it's a challenging thing. For sure, especially at the sixth grade level. But I mean, clearly the outcomes are phenomenal with all these projects.
I think you have to have a good support system in place. And Dr. Wargo and I being able to work back and forth and have that support, or if I'm clogged with an idea for somebody, I can run it past. I got so-and-so who is interested in this, can't quite think of something that
blends those interests and stuff.
Right. Yeah. Or that is, you know, acceptable for them to be able to accomplish
in this period, yeah.
Correct.
Totally. Yeah, and that's where I think the, you know, Dr. Wargo, but also the other high school students comes in. Like, the ones that have done long terms can give some insight, and then you just get this community. It's really great. Awesome. Well,
and I always remind them, too. I say, you're going to be the kids who are going to be helping in a few years,
right?
So now you know what this is like, that when you come back down, you can have the patience and the ideas to be able to work with these kids and to really boost them on throughout the day.
Yeah.
And it was nice to see, you know, the big kids coming back to the little ones, shaking their hands, telling them what a good job.
And asking questions. I saw a lot of people, you know, you have that awkward silence right after, and it's like, well, was anyone going to ask a question? And then you have a lot of these great high schoolers
they prompt them on.
Yeah, and you ask some good questions. Because no one wants to give a talk in front of everyone and get zero questions. It doesn't feel good. So they were always asking good questions.
I was proud of my sixth graders this year. I had quite a few
lot of questions as well
that they were asking.
The one kid wearing a red polo was asking a lot of really good questions. Yeah, I was amazed. Like, I wouldn't have done that in sixth grade in front of an auditorium of high schoolers and alumni. I don't think I would have raised my hand. So
that
this
particular boy, he leaned over to me and went, are we allowed to ask questions? Yes, of course.
That's what you're here for, yeah. Mm. Yeah, no, it's awesome to see. Sweet. Well, thank you for sharing your insight. And I mean, we'll talk to you in years to come as we hopefully expand this, like, at Freedom and at districts in the area and beyond. But yeah, it's great to chat with you.
Wonderful. Sweet. Thanks.
Okay, it was great talking with Janine about helping the sixth graders through these long terms, and really, I think she's proof that this is possible at any level.
She does a great job, she's one of the favorites in the whole district, because I think it's because the students feel like they grow up.
Right,
you know?
Right. Treat these students like adults, have them actually engage, and then they go up to the high school. They don't probably have a feel for what they're doing the whole year, truly, until they present and see, oh, I just did the same thing that these older kids did.
And then right after the conference, everyone always comes up and they're like, next year, what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
They've got, you know, they're excited and so motivated. It's funny, when you first talk to them about, would you like to do a long term? They're like, well, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
But once they do, they're ready to go for next year.
And this is why I really want to get the gap closed between sixth and high school. Because it just...
I know that's one of your goals.
There's so much that... Yeah. I really think that if a student has that transformation in sixth grade, you got to keep the momentum.
Yeah.
Next year I'm going to do this, get started.
Imagine where they could be after.
Well, I mean, if you did that for 6 years, it's crazy. You know? 6 years, and that's something I hadn't considered till Janine and I were talking. There was, you know, at that age, projects take a week, 2 weeks, and that's long. Right? You do a book report or something, and maybe it's a month. So to stick with something for 5 months and present in front of a bunch of older kids that
especially at a time where we have kids with their attention spans getting smaller than our phones,
right? So
concentrating on
it's
a win-win-win, just
across the board.
Yeah.
So it's pretty great.
Maybe we should talk about some resources.
Yeah, absolutely. So, as we mentioned, for getting started, I think that the number one thing, teachers should do, check out the book. It's online. It's available. I think we have a PDF available. If not, we will soon.
You can email us. If you're in a district that's struggling,
yeah,
we'll get it to you.
But either way, reading about how to implement a long-term with a class one time just to get them started, and then just jump in you were saying to the teachers that visited yesterday to observe, you were saying, don't worry about doing it with everyone if it's too overwhelming. get some motivated students, do it with a few, and
don't get too out of your comfort zone. You're not going to want to do it. So just, you know, if you want to do it with a couple students at first, or maybe you don't want to do individual, maybe you want to do a whole class one, something like that. And by the way, they're always invited to present at our conference, but what we'd really like to do is see this expand. So if you're a teacher in a district that would like to try this, come visit us, first of all. Why don't you see what we're doing? And if not, just try it on your own. Maybe we can come visit you.
Yeah.
But there, we have resources available on our website.
Yeah, so www.idealizedscience.org. We'll have resources. We'll discuss the mission of long terms and provide more things there. Our contact information is there. Yeah. Anyone should feel free to reach out to us and ask questions.
Our scholarship information is there. We have some videos.
And we intend to expand the scholarships moving forward, and also start chapters of the nonprofit. So we will certainly have a Freedom chapter, because this is where all this is sort of starting from. But we want to encourage other districts to start chapters of the Idealized Science Institute, so that this can be an umbrella organization for these engagement in authentic science.
And then, like, it's within your community, and that's really what you need is buy-in. We also have another site, the www.sciconhs.org, which shows a lot of example of long-term projects. So that's another great resource.
Yeah, and you've been running that for the years. Maybe not the first year of the conference, but certainly there's six years.
But there's lots of examples, lots of resources. If you're worried about grading, we have rubrics and then some suggestions on using those. But there's lots of resources. There's a few articles there that we've published.
Yep.
Just get in contact with us if we can help in any way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as always, thank you for listening. And if you want to consider supporting the Idealized Science Institute, there's information for how to become a sustaining donor on our website to support this podcast and all of our endeavors. And so with that, maybe we'll just thank you all again for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.
All right. Thank you.